Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
WWL First News. Now back to Ian Hoke on WWL AMFM.com.
What on God's green earth is happening out there? We got building collapses. Now we got a big hole. Is it a pothole or is it a sinkhole? What is happening?
I don't know, and I'm about to head down Rampart to see what's going on. A limo driver called the newsroom literally 2 minutes before we went on the air with the top of the hour newscast, and he was describing what happened. He said he hit the hole, caused a blowout. He just sent me a couple pictures to my personal cell phone. I asked him to text them to me, and his front right tire is blown out. That tire is kaput. I asked him exactly how big of a hole is it. He says it's a huge hole. His words, far right lane by the Superdome on Poydras. At the time it was dark, he couldn't see it. He says there needs to be a barricade there. He said he called the NOPD. The dispatcher, whoever answered, referred him to 311. So I don't know if there's anyone at the NOPD or at City Hall or whoever needs to handle this that's aware of the situation. I don't know if the right hand and the left hand are communicating, but whatever the case is, based on this eyewitness report and these pictures that I just received of the damage to the car anyway, looks like this is at the very least a huge pothole that drivers on Poydras near the Superdome need to be aware of. According to this person, it's in the far right, on the far right lane, closest to the Superdome if you're traveling on Poydras headed towards the river.
So that's inbound. So if you're coming into the CBD on Poydras, be very, very cautious. If there's not already cones or, you know, barricade or something out there, you might,
yeah, based
might
on
just thunk right into that hole.
Based on what the limo driver told me, he said that there are no cones, no barricades, and he said he was fortunate because his car is big enough to have gotten through it with just that wheel damage or that tire damage. He said there are a couple other cars that hit it that didn't fare so well. So more than one car has already hit it.
That is nuts. We will get more information from you later. Ian Ozan, thank you so much. And we'll keep you updated with traffic as well. There hasn't been a whole lot of action this morning, but that big hole on Poydras there might cause some problems on down the line. We're going to step away and take care of some business. I'm very excited about this next interview. Kyle Monty is the founder and CEO of Haptech Incorporated. Really cool technology for consumers and for the United States military. We'll talk about it after this. I'm Ian Hoke in for Tommy Tucker on WWL. Be right back. 7:15 here on WWL, AMFM.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app. I see about a couple dozen people have completed my crossword puzzle so far. Congratulations to you if you are one of them. If you want to play my special year in review crossword puzzle, just text me on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line, 504-260-1870. Say, hey, Ian, I want to play your crossword. Give me the crossword, please. Crossword link. Any of those will do. I'll send it right back to you. You can do the crossword puzzle right there on your phone. No ads, no login, no funny business. Just good, clean fun. Good vibes only. Joining me on the line right now is Kyle Monty. Kyle Monty is from right here in Luling, Louisiana. He's the founder and CEO of Haptech Incorporated. Kyle, thanks for making time this morning.
Thank you for having me, Ian.
Absolutely. We have a lot to cover, but not quite enough time to do it all, Kyle. So I want to talk about your military contracts and stuff in a bit. But what really got my bow tie spinning when I saw this press release is the Stryker VR technology. Reading from the press release now, Martin Hawley, who actually, now I'm realizing if it's the same Martin Hawley, I went to college with Martin. Wow.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, holy cow. Okay, so Martin said the Maverick, which is designed by Stryker VR, one of your companies here, is not just a virtual reality accessory. It's a portal to sensory critical mass. With our technology, you're not confined to a couch or a screen. You're actively immersed and engaged in your virtual environment. It's the duck hunt gun of VR. Only this time, your whole house is the game. So I feel like maybe I can, if I was in an elevator and I was having to explain this to somebody quickly, I'd say like it's a duck hunt gun. It's like a gun that you hold with both hands. So if you're doing virtual reality first person shooter in your house, it's like an augmented reality tool almost. Like, you know, when you go play Pokemon Go, and you would point your phone at the real world, and you'd see little monsters running around. This is kind of the new form of that technology, but it's for first person shooters. Is that a right way to say this?
Yeah, and look, you know, first-person shooters were, you know, kind of the lowest-hanging fruit, if you will. You know, there's a lot of games that kind of deploy that that play style. So that was, you know, where we put our focus starting out because we had a technology that could produce these, you know, realistic forces that, you know, felt like recoil. You could do these little tertiary haptic effects to, you know, make feel like the, you know, the environment you were playing in was vibrating through the thing you were holding. Right. So we started with the Arena Infinity. It was the blaster before the Maverick, the one that you were just talking about. Mm-hmm. And it covered location based entertainment, LBE for short. And then now we've moved on. We've kind of stair stepped it down to consumer. And the consumer model, you know, obviously has, you know, because the, you know, the consumer would buy this, it obviously has a lot more rich input. So we actually don't just consider it for FPS. We also consider it for institutions. There is a university, Stanford, that is currently using the blaster for, you know, mixed reality. And there's a bunch of other people that find the technology really exciting because it brings so much immersion to the user and so much rich input into the simulation.
This sounds awesome, Kyle. I'm really excited. Like I said, I saw the press release and I was like, whoa, that's awesome. I got to get my hands on one of these things. Your company is called Haptech, which is kind of a play on the word haptic when we talk about haptic feedback. Can you explain what that is for people listening who don't know what haptic feedback is and why that might be cool for them to experience in a gaming situation like this?
Sure. So, so haptics, you know, you can kind of be more familiar with it, like a keyboard press. You get that click when you press, you know, a key on your phone keyboard, and there's a little buzz from a motor inside the phone. So it's not purely a mechanical, but it's an electromechanical simulation or the feeling that you get back from that key press that doesn't, you know, the key doesn't really exist. But you get that sensation. So that's what a haptic is. And there's tons of that. You know, the old light gun, we were talking about Duck Hunt, just a minute ago.
Right.
And, when you, that click of the trigger, that's a haptic effect. It's just a slip haptic. So the trigger slips. It makes you feel like a hammer's fallen, but there is no real hammer there.
So I'm imagining my board operator, Colin, here and I, if we each had one of these Mavericks and we're here in the office and we can kind of be creeping around corners and, you know, like doing missions together and stuff. But the office is the space that we're playing in. It's an actual real life space that we're playing in, but it's dressed up through through this virtual reality system. That's so cool.
So there's three games out for it right now that the consumer can purchase. It's Undercover, Tower Tag, and Laser Limbo. Laser Limbo is very close to that indoor laser tag experience, right, where you'll have your headset on, but the Quest 3 has front-facing cameras so you can see your surroundings. And then the headset overlays things on your surroundings. So you can, you know, duck behind objects that aren't really there and find cover as you're actually playing in your real environment.
Great. Okay. So I see, looks like they're retailing for about $499. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
And that seems pretty competitive to me when I look at other virtual reality headsets and things like that. I mean, that seems like a competitive price.
Yeah. We think so. The headsets are generally priced around the same, and we're trying to also bundle. So we're putting together packages for the games themselves. So not only will you get the blaster, but you'll get a game or two along with the purchase of the blaster.
And who are you primarily thinking is going to pick these up here, man? Is this for like more casual gamers, or is this something that's going to appeal
to VR
enthusiasts?
Yeah, these are VR enthusiasts. These are like prosumers, as we'd call them.
I'm sorry, you call them what?
Prosumers.
Oh, prosumers, like consumers, yep. But they're pro consumers. Is that it?
Yeah, but they're professional consumers. Yep.
Cool. Great. All right. Look, we got more to cover here. We're going to take a quick break, Kyle, if I can hang on to you just another 8 or 9 minutes here. Great. Let's step away and get another look at traffic and take care of some biz. We'll come back and finish up with Kyle Monty right here in Luling. and apparently in business with one of my college buddies, Martin Holly. Neat. We will talk more with Kyle about what his company is doing for the United States military, development and research projects, moving their inventions from prototype to product after a decade of local engineering. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Tommy Tucker today. Happy New Year to you and yours. We'll be right back after this. Here's Courtney with the traffic. Yeah, you're right. Right back here on WWL. Kyle Monty is my guest. He's a founder and CEO of HapTech. Welcome back, Kyle.
Hi.
Let's talk about what your company is doing with the United States military. I see here in 2024, you landed $11.5 million in U.S. military research and development projects. What are you doing for the military?
Yeah, so what we've done is we've expanded our technology into the use of drop-in kits, and they were originally used in surrogates. And so drop-in kits take live weapons. You field strip the weapon, so it's like normal cleaning, and then you put our kit in, which has our linear motor system, and it converts that live weapon into a training device. So this allows for the Army to have a smaller footprint when they're moving equipment around, because they can actually just use the real weapons to train, and it makes their training more homogenous.
That's amazing. So you can take an actual field weapon, strip it, and then put your, what do you call it, the drop-in kit?
Yeah, our drop-in kits, yeah.
So that way
we call it our ERS line.
ER,
so it stands for Electromagnetic Recoil and Instrumentation System.
So it goes from being a live-fire weapon to something that you can use for training purposes instead, and nobody's going to get hurt.
That's correct. And then just like the, you know, some of the technology that's in the Maverick and that Arena Infinity blaster I told you, it's basically using similar technology, a little more advanced, but it's a similar technology, and it's creating recoil and also other haptic effects that you might experience on the real weapon under different scenarios.
That is amazing. Congratulations to you and your company. This all sounds so exciting to me. I'm a big technology guy.
Thank
I'm
you.
So glad I got a chance to talk to you. Do me a favor. Will you tell Martin I said hello?
I will. And I'd love to give a shout out to GNO Inc. too. You know, they've been champions of HapTech for about a decade now.
Yes.
And they're really helping us push forward with the quality jobs program and Fast Start. So we can't, you know, be thankful enough for their support.
That's fantastic. Yeah, we're big fans of GNO Inc. here at WWL. We know all about it. Good luck to you and the rest of the team. Kyle, really nice speaking with you this morning. Happy New Year, and take good care.
Happy New Year to you, Ian.
All right. Thanks so much. Hey, listen, coming up at 7:45, we're going to talk to Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member. Big changes are coming to the Sewerage and Water Board. The way that this organization is run is about to change in a drastic way. And I have some questions for Joe about what's going to happen after they make these changes. To me, this seems like the kind of thing where sometimes in the city of New Orleans, the government or some sort of NGO will roll out a new program that's supposed to be impressive and everybody's supposed to love it. And then they get it up and running and then discover, oh, we actually don't we don't have the resources in place to support this work. Everyone's hearts are in the right place, but I don't know, some there's miscommunication or somebody didn't think to, you know, cross the T's and dot the lowercase J's. But anyway, we'll get all that cleared up with Joe Geruso. And then later on in the show, around 8:15, we're going to talk to a professor of psychology at Iowa State University. Her name is Allison Phillips. Did you make any New Year's resolutions? If you did last year, did you keep them? We'll get some tips on how to make sure that those resolutions stick. Again, that's coming up about 8:15. If you're making any resolutions, you're going to want to stick around and make sure you know how to keep them. I also have tips for a better night out. I expect a lot of you are going to be celebrating with some adult beverages tonight. I got some myths that I'm going to bust that might help you have a better time tonight and feel better when you wake up tomorrow morning. All that and much more coming up on WWL First News. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Tommy Tucker. He'll be back on Friday. But until then, I'm not stuck in here with you. You're stuck in here with me. Here's the news with Ian Ozan. Be right back.
I'm Ian Ozan, WWL First News. Now back to Ian Hoke on WWL AMFM.com.
You know what story I hate?
What's that?
The people in Times Square, man. I would never. You couldn't pay me enough. I don't want to exaggerate. You could pay me to go do that, but it'd be a lot. Like if you say, like, "Here's $500 to go stand around in Times Square in a diaper for 8 hours."
Oh gosh,
I'd be like, "Okay, I'll take the $500." Does that sound fun to either of you?
Not at all.
I don't think I'm gonna do that.
Not at all. What if you miss the diaper?
Oh man. Yeah, or the person next to you, and you're like stuck with them
gosh,
all night.
No, 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 no.
And then you're like, we got to listen to the Mariah Carey song again, or whatever we're doing out here. Man, that sounds like a nightmare. Never in a million years I would do that.
All no.
Right. Well, I'm glad we're all on the same page about that. Ian, did we learn anything else about that, the big hole on Poitras?
We've not heard anything else about it yet, but news director Dave Cohen called me a little while ago, and he says once every few years in that same spot, you get a hole that pops up, they'll put a plate over it, they'll fill it, then in about another 3 to 5 years, it'll happen again. So apparently nothing new at that particular location.
What is it like cicadas that come up every 17 years or whatever? They're like, it's time for the old Poitras Street hole to open up again.
I guess so. It's like the birds flying home for the winter. It's something that regularly happens.
My Lord. All right. Thank you, Courtney. Thank you, Ian. We'll hear from both of you again in short order. I do have a text message here that says fog on the causeway is super thick, so be careful driving. You already heard from Courtney. The commute is pretty easy today, just about everywhere you're going. But I can even see out my window looking out at the bridge over the river right now. It is super duper thick out there. Big fat fog. So, you know, be cautious, be defensive, and be polite to one another, please. It's the last day of the year. There's no reason for you to spoil things by getting an accident today. When we come back, we'll be speaking to Joe Geruso, New Orleans City Council member from District A. The New Orleans City Council has officially consolidated the city's drainage system. Guess who's in charge of it now? The Sewerage and Water Board. What could go wrong? 740 here on WWL. I'll be right back after this with Joe Geruso. Stick around. Turn it up. I love this song. 746 here on WWL, AMFM.com, and always live on that free Odyssey app. I got a text message here that's letting us know the Causeway Bridge is closed, but nobody panic. Don't change what you're doing. We got a memo. This is just hot off the presses. The southbound span of the Causeway Bridge was closed briefly for fog. They were going out there and putting up some cones and stuff to keep everybody safe. They said it would only be closed for about 15 minutes, and that was about 10 minutes ago. So it should be open by now, or very shortly. So if you're on the North Shore and you're heading down my way, you should be okay to be on the causeway. You might have some delays there, but the bridge, if it's closed at this exact moment, it should be reopened again shortly. We're trying to get in touch with Council Member District A, Joe Geruso. And once we get him on, we'll jump right into it. But I do have some text messages I can read here. Here's one that says, Ian, you may recall a few years back when another hole developed on Poitras Street. Don't know if this one is related, but when they were planning the interstate in the 1960s, they built a tunnel under Poitras Street for interstate traffic. It was never used, but it was left there. You may want to have your news crew look into whether or not this hole is from that same structure. I think it's not, because the hole that we're talking about this morning that's opened up is by the Superdome, and the tunnel that goes under Poitras Street is kind of over by the casino. It's down there, which is just the most New Orleans thing ever. In the 1960s, they're planning the interstate. The plan is to have it go between the French Quarter and the river, where like Decatur and North Peter Street is kind of now, and that whole riverfront area there. That's where they originally wanted the interstate to go. But before they had that plan fully in place, they dug a tunnel underneath Poitras Street to accommodate that traffic. Well, then, of course, we all know what happened next. The interstate ended up going on Claiborne Avenue instead of, you know, along the riverfront. But they'd already built the tunnel, which is just kind of a silly thing to do, I think. But like I said, the most New Orleans thing ever. Anyway, so there is a big pothole apparently on Poitras Street inbound, near the Superdome in the right-hand lane. So if you're coming into town on Poitras, take caution. Join us on the line right now is New Orleans City Councilmember District A, Joe Geruso. Councilman, good morning and Happy New Year. Thanks for being here today.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
From WWLTV.com, the New Orleans City Council officially consolidated the city's drainage system, making catch basins the responsibility of the Sewerage and Water Board. Before, catch basins were under the city's Department of Public Works. Leaders say that split was confusing and unnecessary. The Sewerage and Water Board says they're up for the challenge. Joe, tell us more about what was the driving force behind this plan. Why was DPW... that was a confusing and unnecessary bifurcation of this responsibility for the catch basins. How did we get here?
We got here because I think what was said in the story, which is there was too much confusion. And I'll use, unfortunately, a sports analogy, but I think it's a good one. When you have two quarterbacks, you have none. And the split was such that DPW had the catch basins, cleaning the catch basins, the linear lines up to a certain point, and then Sewage and Water Board had the linear lines that were larger than that, and then always out to the canals. And ultimately what ended up happening is whose responsibility is something? Is it a Sewage and Water Board responsibility? Is it a Department of Public Works responsibility? And as I said yesterday during the council meeting, sometimes something would happen that would be a DPW issue that Sewage and Water Board would be blamed for. Something might be a Sewage and Water Board issue that DPW may be blamed for. And it just made sense, rather than to have a function that affects the whole city live in two different places consolidated into one. And look, I think the obstacles were there's a financial component to all of this. This is a big new responsibility for Sewage and Water Board. And really the push internally with a consolidation committee years ago, and then finally the legislation by Senator Harris to consolidate, push this over the edge.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the funding. You clearly, everybody feels pretty confident that Sewage and Water Board is going to have the resources and capacity to manage the catch basin system effectively.
Yeah, look, I think what we've said repeatedly is there are 72,000 catch basins. The city has cleaned somewhere between 7,000 to 10,000 in the last year, which means there's roughly 60,000 that remain untouched. And that has to be addressed. Yes. And I think what Sewage and Water Board has said is we realize all of that. And if we're going to address everything from top to bottom and hire new people and get equipment, that's going to be $40 million. And what we as the council have said is, well, we were concerned about giving any one agency a whole bunch of money, and let's see what the work looks like. So the funding will be money from Fair Share, which will be about $10 million. There's some leftover ARPA money, about $3 to $5 million, and there's some traffic camera revenue. So somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 million, Sewage and Water Board will get to start this work. And then we'll just come back in May, June, July and look at everything and see, you know, the progress that has been made. Hopefully it's been good. And if Sewage and Water Board is really doing an extraordinarily good job, I think the council and if the finances are in place will be inclined to give more money to keep all that up.
Great. Okay. So let's talk if it's available. What are the sort of specific metrics you're hoping to use to evaluate this progress? I mean, if you say by May or June, sometime in the summer, the Sewerage and Water Board has cleaned another 10,000 or 12,000 or 15,000 catch basins. How are you going to score this progress? How long is it expected to take to get the entire flight of catch basins all cleaned out?
That's a great question. I don't know that we're going to sit here and say you have to hit this specific number and therefore you're going to get the money. I think what we're concerned about is going back a year when we allocated money for catch basin cleaning in 2022, the contract for DPW didn't go out the door till February 24. And so for more than a year, the money sat fallow doing nothing. And I'm not saying that's going to happen again, but I am saying when you've known that has the capacity to happen, what is going on? And so I think what we're going to be looking for is a few things. Number one, what system is Sewage and Water Board going to be used for cleaning catch basins? I would argue that places that are known flooding threats ought to be at the top of the list and prioritized over any place else. then, you know, if you said the city with its contractor cleans 10,000 in a year, if they're at half a year, somewhere around 5,000 would feel about right. What are they doing with their linear line? Have the places where they cleaned, has there been a rain event and then there wasn't as much flooding there as a result of that? So I think it's going to be a mixture of hard numbers and then also anecdotally what we're getting back from residents. And then there's another piece of this that Council Member Thomas specifically raised yesterday, which is the public needs to know about it. And so we've encouraged Sewage and Water Board and the city to work together to put that information publicly, probably on a dashboard so everybody can see it, just like they link people to this is our power situation.
Yeah.
This is now how many catch basins we've cleaned and how much linear line we're fixing.
Really neat. Well, I'm satisfied. I think this is a positive development. Thanks for your time, your work, and your way, Councilman. Happy New Year to you and yours. Thanks for being with us today.
Happy New Year. Take care.
And you as well. All right, we'll step away and take care of some business. But first, please, here's traffic with Courtney P. Here's a text message that says, you need to start putting the Causeway Commission on blast. One of the worst fog days I've had in 10 years driving this bridge. They were wide open in both directions until 7:30 when they started coming in the southbound lanes. This time of year, they need to be decisive and get safety measures in place before another pileup. Well, we had a bad fog day a little while ago, a couple weeks ago. We talked to Carlton on the Scoot Show. You know, I don't know if we need to start putting them on blast. I think that's a little harsh, but we can certainly be asking them the tough questions like, hey, why do we keep getting these weather advisories with these dense fog warnings? And it seems like nothing happens until maybe it's a little bit too late. I hope everybody's being safe out there. In the next hour, we're going to talk about your New Year's resolutions. If you made one for 2024, did you keep it? Maybe you didn't, and maybe we can help you keep one in 2025. We'll also be getting all the details for the New Year's Eve fireworks, and we'll be talking about LSU versus Baylor a little bit later. I'm Ian Hoken for Tommy Tucker. Be right back after this. Here's the news.